Hello and welcome to Hockey Development Talk. Today I'm back with Lee Ibel. Hi, Lee.
Hi there, how you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. So we're going to talk about you, your coaching journey this time. We chatted last time about Wales and all about Hockey Wales. So this time let's talk about you. So do you want to kick us off?
Okay, yeah, talk about myself now. It's a little bit more difficult. Well, obviously, yeah, in conjunction with my job in terms of a coach developer, I'm also, I suppose, forging my own path as a coach. You know, want to see how far I can take that. So yeah, sort of the last sort of 10 years, I suppose, I've really knuckled down, and coaching's been what I've really got my teeth into. But yeah, before that, I was a player, like pretty much 99% of people would probably get into hockey coaching. I was a player. I grew up at Chester Hockey Club, and when I say I grew up there, I grew up there every weekend, Saturday, Sunday. Basically, when I wasn't at school, I was at Chester Hockey Club. Is where my dad was a member. You know, he's 50 years he's been a member now of Chester, so yeah, he's a lifelong member there. So literally, I knew nothing else as a kid in terms of, it was school during the week, and at the weekends it was just being carted off to hockey pitches all over the north of England, you know. So yeah, hockey was basically my life from as young as I can remember, really. So yeah, and I played there till I was 17. I played at Chester until I was 17, and I remember we played Brooklands in the Cheshire Cup semi-final, and we won 3-0 amazingly. I couldn't, you know, Brooklands at the time were in the old Div 1 and were a decent side, and we, you know, we were a bunch of young lads from Chester, a lot of us sort of 16, 17, 18 years of age, and we went to Brooklands in the semi-final and turned them over 3-0. And I remember at the end of the game, one of the old guys from Brooklands coming up to me, knew my dad, and just said, "Oh, you'll be playing here next season, by the way." And I was like, "Oh, will I?" And he was like, "Yeah, we want you to sign." So, yeah, signed for Brooklands at sort of 17, 18 years of age, and I was there for sort of 8, 9 seasons, and yeah, absolutely loved it. You know, Brooklands are probably, you know, I know I say I grew up at Chester, but and it will always be my home club in terms of where my dad's still attached to. But Brooklands is the team who I say that's my club, because I had such a good time there. It was like, yeah, it's such a great club in terms of, and I think it fitted me in terms of the type of person I am. It's kind of like they're a bit rough and ready around the edges, and they're a bit of an underdog side, and you know, at times rub people up the wrong way, and it just suited me and the guys who. We formed a team, and we ended up going from kind of an unfancied North Conference team, and you know, all the way to the Premier League, and they're still there now, and they're still punching above their weight. And you know, it's so yeah. That was my kind of playing career club wise, and at the same time, I played 16s, 18s, 21s, and into the senior squads with Wales. I'd probably say my international career as a player at senior level didn't go as I wanted to, and I feel a bit unfulfilled in that, and that possibly drives a lot of what I do as a coach. I think I've said that a few times to people in the past, is, you know, why are you involved in Wales? Why do you want to coach Wales under 18s? Why do you want to, you know, be involved in all the stuff in Wales? It's because I don't think the pathway for me or the environment for me wasn't as good as it could have been. I blame myself at times, you know, I'm partly to blame for how my international career went as a senior international. But at the same time, I don't think the environment was quite where it was today, and that's part of, I want to make the environments for the players today in Wales better than it was for when I was there, you know. So so yeah, that's kind of
The
a brief
reflection.
history of where I've been with my playing, and then kind of transitioned into coaching.
Yeah. So just before we move into the coaching side, when you were obviously at Chester to start with, who was coaching you there? Who was coaching you?
Who are our coaches there? So when I was a youngster, probably when I was, there's a few guys at the club who were quite a junior level. Not really anybody who I can really remember. The first coach I really remember at the club making an impact with the first team was a guy called Nick Clark, who did some England stuff over the years, and is, you know, was a England international. He was up at Birkenhead School at the time, and he came into Chester, and it was kind of, he took the first team up a few leagues, and you know, I was still probably only 13, 14 at the time, but I remember looking at him and going, you know, he's had a great impact on that. In terms of, you know, junior coaches around that time, I didn't really have one who I can really put my finger on going, you know, that was the kind of the coach that really inspired me at a young age or whatever. Yeah. It was my dad as much as anything, you know. It was my dad, because my dad took me everywhere, you know. So, you know, when I first went in goal and put the pads on at 10 years of age, he was like, right, okay, you know, next weekend we'll go down the club on the Sunday morning training. I'll get you a goalkeeping kit. You know, he got me a kit. We went in goal. I loved it in that first full session. And then that was it. Then I was, you know, before I know it, I was travelling all over the place with Cheshire and North West, and then getting into the Wales stuff. And, you know, so in terms of, I had loads of different coaches, and different coaches came and went, you know. But, you know, the one person that was consistent through my kind of, you know, from when I started playing at 10 through till I went Brooklands at 18, with my dad, in terms of like a support person around me, you know. So, you know, I got to thank him. You know, I probably never have thanked him, so I'll do it now, and he probably won't listen to this, but, you know, I'll thank him for starting me around, and, you know, driving home from work and pulling up outside the house, and literally wouldn't get out of the car because I'd come straight out the door, chuck my kit in the car, get in, and we'd drive wherever for the evening, and he'd do that, and then drive us home, and get up and go to work the next day. And, you know, he, without him doing that, then, you know, I wouldn't have got to where I got to. You know, I wouldn't have been able to have done what I did as a, you know, through the age group stuff, whether that was with, you know, Cheshire and the northwest of England as it was back then, and then moving into the Wales squads, you know, with 16s and 18s. It was because of his support more than anything. So, you know,
it's pretty
like
cool,
any young player, isn't it? You know, it's like, you know, parents, a massive driver. And like I say, he did that for me, and he did that for my sister. So, you know, massive, massive thanks to him, you know, and also, yeah, I suppose my mum as well. So, yeah, there was no real coach. The first coach that at Chester we had Nick Clark, but I wasn't in the first team at that point. And then just as I was getting into the first team, we had Chris Mayer, who was obviously playing at Cannock at the time, and England GB international. And he was a great player, and he kind of, you know, I suppose the way he coached is he showed how good a player he was, and that kind of, that was the way he coached, rather than, you know, as a coach where we might think of now. It was more like, well, you know, he's a very, very good player, and he kind of just brought that to the brought that to the table. But the first coach who I really remember in terms of, and still, you know, had a massive impact on me, was Paul Revington. In terms of when I first joined Brooklands, he came over from South Africa. And obviously now he's Great Britain, you know, EDP coach and assistant with the senior squads. And I remember I turned up at Brooklands and young lad playing in the twos, doing a bit of ones, kind of on, you know, was in that squad. And he came over. He was only there for half a season because South Africa then came in for him and said, we want you to come back and take the South African team. But he was our coach for 3 months, 4 months. And honestly, you still speak to the boys in the Brooklands team back then, and they'd speak but nothing of fond memories of the guy and the sessions, you know. And the thing is with Revs is, I've been all around the world. I've been to Cape Town, where he's from, where he coached. I was out there doing coaching myself. I've been to loads of places around the world where Revs has been, and spoke to people who know him. And I've never heard one person say a bad word about him. And everybody's just says how great a person he is, and what a great coach he is, and what just a fantastic guy. And it's like, so he was the first coach, and still now I look back and go, you know, if I can, you know, I'll never be him. But, you know, he's somebody that you can go, you know what, there's somebody you can aspire to be in terms of what he brought. And I just remember the training sessions were brutal. They were absolutely horrible. and you'd come off the end of the session. And I remember one of the first sessions, I couldn't walk because my cramp was that bad. But I was like, you know what, I can't wait to get back here on Thursday.
Yeah.
I can't wait to get here again. He's absolutely beasted us for an hour and a half here. And he's relentless in his intensity, and he'll get on your back if you're not doing things well, but he'll praise you when you do things well. He's, you know, he's just from the moment of from the first whistle of the session, from the first ball being touched to the last ball being touched of the session, he is on it, and his energy is there. You know, I've seen him a couple of times since he's been back over and watched his session, and he's no different now to what he was then. So he's kind of the first coach who I look back on and go, do you know what? Yeah. There's somebody who I look at and go, he's a definite influence.
That's pretty good.
Coaching, yeah. So,
I have got one thing to say about him that I could, it's slightly a bad word, is he supports Manchester United. So for me, that was tough. That was tough. So.
He does. You know, I'm a Liverpool fan, so
Me
that's
too.
probably his only, that's probably his only downside. But
Yeah, he sat next to me at the England hockey Christmas party and he told me he was a Man United fan. And when I told him I was a Liverpool fan, there became a barrier. A good barrier.
exactly.
Lots of banter since. So it's been good. But
But
no, you're
he's
right.
great.
He is a top bloke. He is a top bloke.
Yeah, and that was it, I suppose. He just, you know, I can't really remember any of the training sessions back then because I wasn't really thinking it. You know, I just turned up as a player and I paid no attention to what we were actually doing or anything like that. In terms of, obviously, I did pay attention to what we're doing there and then, but I wasn't really studying the game. I wasn't really going away, going and reflecting on what he'd done because I wasn't looking at it from a coaching point of view. I was purely turning up, training hard as a player and just wanting to get better at, as a player. So I can't remember a lot in terms of, you know, the exercises we did and that kind of stuff, but it, that's not the thing I remember about him. It was just his enthusiasm and his energy in the sessions, and it was like, yeah, it's just his personality, and he just made everybody feel good, and he was just, yeah, he just had that kind of, you know, it's if it, looking at it as a Liverpool fan, it's like when you look at Jurgen Klopp, you kind of go, well, I don't know what he does in training, but I look at his personality, and you kind of go, that's what Revs was. It doesn't matter what we did on the pitch, what the exercise was, what the tactics were. It was just his energy and his enthusiasm and his personality and his character that was like, I just want to play for this guy, you know. So,
Which is great, you know
yeah,
that.
which is yeah, as much as
Awesome.
anything, that's yeah.
If you know, and if people said that about yourself, you'd be happy, wouldn't you? If people said, "I just want to play for this guy," you'd be,
I would. I would be really happy if people said that. I've yet to hear it. I don't know, but
I'm not saying that they don't, Lee. I'm just saying, you know,
No, I mean,
it's.
yeah, and that's it. That's it. If people say that about me, if certain people say like, oh, you know, great guy to play for, really enjoy playing for Lee, then that'd make me happy. Do you know what I mean? You know, and it's yeah, it's that. So he's one of the first influences in terms of like as a coach that kind of I really thought, wow, what a guy. You know. So yeah, and I suppose while I was at while I was at Brooklands, we had him, and then John Bell came in a couple of years later, and he did a really good job. And what he did is he brought a load of young lads in from the pathway at the time, and I suppose that's what really kick-started us at Brooklands to make us to put Brooklands on the map where it is now, you know. And Bell's got to be, you know, he's got to have massive credit in that because he was the first guy who got us back into the Premier League after sort of a 10, 12-year absence. And it's because he kind of, you know, he invested in youth, so to speak. You know, he got in the likes of Andy Ball and Scott Evans and Henry Weir, Pete Jackson, who were all England 16s, 18s players at the time. Phil Roper came across for a little bit, and because Belly's involvement in the pathway, he invited them across. And you know, we had such a young team at that point, but you know, even the older guys who we class as older guys, then we were in the early 20s. So, but you know, it was, you know, you. So what Belly did there in terms of like getting the youth players in, you know, I look at that and go, you know, he was pretty brave to do that, you know, invest in that kind of youth and give 16, 17-year-olds game time in, you know, the conference and the old Div 1 as it was there. But we got promoted to the Premier League because we had this young, exciting side who kind of who played with no fear and was really close-knit. And, you know, I think, you know, Belly's got to take great credit for that, you know, in terms of what he did there. So yeah, I mean, you know, while I was at Brooklands, probably Revs and Belly were the two coaches during my career there who kind of who had the biggest impact on me and also on the team as a whole. And I think just thinking there, both of them, what they did is they made me feel good. And I suppose that's why I enjoyed playing for Brooklands more than I enjoyed playing for Wales because I felt like I felt wanted. I felt like I was, they believed in me, both of those guys, you know, Revs and Belly. It was like, you know, you felt like they had your back and they had real confidence in you and your ability as a player. And you know, like, once again, it goes back to, you know, as a coach, you can have all the tech and the tack and the X's and O's on a board, but you know, just giving players that confidence and that belief in their ability and that you've got their backing is, you know, that's huge. You know, that can't be underestimated. So
no, I agree.
I think if I take anything from those two guys, and what I try and do now is try and give confidence, you know, to people that, you know, you are a good player. I believe in you. I trust in you. And, you know, that goes so, you know, goes such a long way. Just getting people to have that confidence and belief. So, so yeah, it's from playing at Brooklands. They were the two I thought, you know, looking back on it, would be big influences and you know, I really enjoyed playing for.
Brilliant. And obviously you finished playing, or did you start coaching and then finish playing? How did that sort of start? How did that?
Yeah, I was started coaching when I was at university. So I was at Man Met, but down at Crewe and All Sages doing my degree. So it wasn't far from Stoke and North Staffs Hockey Club. And a guy who used to play for us at Brooklands, Philly Harper, he was from North Staffs, but he played at Brooklands. And he said, oh, look, the ladies are looking for a coach. I was at university. I was like 20. And I was like, yeah, go on then. I'd done a level one at Chester when I was like 16 or something, because it was level one on one weekend. And I was 16, 17 at the time. And I remember it at the level one. It was at Chester. And my dad said, you're going on this. And I was like, I had no idea why I was going on it. He just said, I've signed you up to do your level one. You're going on it at the weekend. And the only thing I remember was the same weekend. Really annoyed that I had to be on this coaching course when it was the FA Cup final. And that's the only thing I remember from that course. And I did that level one, no idea why I did it. Anyway, I got to uni and North Staff said, look, we need a coach. We want 1 hour a week on a Monday or Tuesday night. I can't remember what it was. And come with us on a Saturday. And I was like, yeah, okay. And literally, I would, whatever we'd done at Brooklands the week before, I would water that down or chop it up a little bit and basically regurgitate that session to the girls at North Staffs the following week. And that was it. And I thought, well, this is easy. They're giving me like 40 quid a week here. You know what I mean? As a student, happy days. I turn up, do an hour, and basically I do what we did at Brooklands on Thursday. I'll do it with the North Staffs girls on a Tuesday. And then I turn up on a Saturday. I give them a bit of a motivational talk. I tell them at half time to pass the ball a bit faster, get the communication up, give it a few cliches, because I didn't know what coaching was at that stage, and that was it. And it was like, you know, it was all right. I did that for two seasons whilst I was playing at Brooklands. But, you know, I was literally just, I wasn't really thinking too hard about it, if I'm honest. I was just regurgitating stuff I did at Brooklands. And, you know, looking back on it now, I'm like, oh, God, I was a terrible coach. What was I doing? You know what I mean? I was useless. You know, we just about stayed up the first season, and the second season we got relegated. So I'm like, but I was just, yeah, looking back on it now, God, it was terrible. And I you know, knowing what I know now, but you kind of have to go through that. I knew, you know, you only know what you know, and I didn't know very much at that time.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I was still playing at Brooklands. I was at uni. I finished uni. My coaching Crewe ladies did them for a season because Mark Bateman, who England under 16 boys head coach, me and him were good mates, played at Brooklands, and we were at uni together. And he said, oh, I'm coaching Crewe men. The ladies need it. Why don't you do the women? I'll do the men. And we, you know, and we kind of, you know, we used to share ideas. And I suppose at that time, that was when me and him, we started getting into the coaching. So we were still playing at Brooklands, and that was our real main thing. We loved playing at Brooklands. But we'd sit round each other, you know. He'd come to round my house, or I'd go round his house because he lived not just round the corner from uni. And we'd just sit there and we'd talk about hockey. We'd plan training session. We'd come up with different drills and exercises. And you know, he sent me a picture a couple of months back, going, "Oh, I've just had a clear out of my old files, and look what I've just found." It was loads of pictures of drills and exercises that we'd drawn out sitting around his house. It was like, that's how sad we were at, like, you know, 22, 23 years of age, you know. But that's when we started getting the bug and going, yeah, we could do something with coaching, you know, we want to get really good at this. And so me and him coached Crewe for a year, and then he went to Chester. So I followed him to Chester because that was my home club, and I was moving back home that way. I took over the ladies at Chester for a few years, and that was when I was really getting into my coaching, in terms of I was starting to think about it a lot more. You know, I was probably putting just as much, if not more, time into the planning of the sessions and my pre-match briefings than the actual sessions were lasting, you know.
Right.
And I was really, really getting into it. I did my level 2 at the time, and I went straight onto my level 3. And I remember, you know, by the age of 24, myself and Bateman had both completed our level 3s. You know, we'd done it, you know. And I remember at that stage, so we're 24 years of age, we're doing all right with our coaching because we're getting a bit more success, and our teams are playing a bit better because we're putting more effort and more thinking into what we're doing, and we're sharing ideas between each other, and we're talking about things. And we've just done our level 3s. And I remember, I've said this to a few people, I remember thinking to myself, oh, that's it. Well, what more is there to know about coaching? I've completed my level 3. There's no more levels to really do now. I mean, and I know a hell of a lot about the game. I mean, what is there more to know? That's kind of how naive I still was at the time. And then it's been sort of in this last, I'd say, 6 years that I've really probably... I've moved a few more levels up because once again, just the learning and the different things I've looked into. But yeah, that's where I was at 24, 25, was thinking, okay, what next? And that was a stage where I had a couple of years out in Cape Town. So I went and in the off season over here, I went down to Cape Town and did some coaching out there with a club called Pinelands, who, you know, I still keep in touch with and go back and visit and talk to those guys on a regular basis. And I remember that was probably where I thought, you know what, I think I can do something as a coach, because I just randomly emailed them because I had a summer free. You know, they were looking for a coach. They were a good team. You know, they had international players, Austin Smith.
Wow.
He played for them. You know, and I was a 25-year-old lad who'd done a bit of coaching but was still playing, and I went down there and I thought, this was the first men's team I'd ever coached. They were all the same age as me. They were all, you know, strong characters, fully grown men, decent players, South African under-21, South African senior players. The captain of South Africa played for them when he was at home from Holland. So it was like, wow, this is a step up. I remember thinking, right, let's go there and just give this a go. And I remember by the end of the first season, they turned around to me and said, you are coming back next season. I was like, well, I don't know. I'll have to think about it. I'll have to try and see what I can do. And they were like, no, we really, really want you back. And at that point, I thought to myself, right, if these guys are saying they want me back, then I'm obviously not horrendous at this. You know, I can do something. You know, I can do something in the world of coaching.
Yeah.
And from there, I suppose I went back the season after. I came back home. I played for Brooklands. That was my last season. And I was 26, 27. And I said to myself, right, Brooklands, I'm going to pack in. I've had enough. I've got to the point where I'm just not quite enjoying playing as much as I was. And coaching is what I'm really enjoying doing more than anything. You know, and it was that kind of period of time where I was looking forward to going coaching probably more than I was looking forward to doing my own training and playing at the weekend. I was looking forward to going to the Saturday match with the club team I was coaching rather than my match on a Sunday afternoon. Although I was still enjoying it, the coaching was becoming a thing that I really enjoyed because I was just, I suppose I was enjoying, because I felt I was making an impact now and I developed as a coach. I feel I could see the impact I was having in a positive way. So I was seeing things we'd worked on. I was seeing players improve. I was seeing my influence on the game, you know, coming out in a positive way. So it was kind of, I was getting that buzz of like, well, look at the impact and influence I'm having on this group of players.
And how did that make you feel? How did that make you feel once you started to reflect on that? What did that make you feel? Similar to how it made you feel when you look back now on Rebs and Belly? Similar to that?
Yeah, I'd probably say that's where it was, you know, is that kind of, and I know we talk about now, you know, obviously it's about the players and getting them making decisions, and absolutely, but there's still a role for the coach, you know. If there wasn't, then why would you have a coach? There are times when the coach has to make decisions. There's a time when the coach says, look, we're doing it that way, this way, and this is how it's going to be, you know, because it's another pair of eyes, it's another brain, you know.
you know, if we went totally down, it's all down to the players, then we wouldn't need a coach. So what I enjoyed is that kind of, when I'd say something and say, look, guys, I think we could do this, or let's try that, or, you know, and it worked. And then the players afterwards, you know, in the bar or whatever, going, oh, wow, you know, what you did there, that was amazing. It changed the game, or what you said to me there, guys, really working and stuff like this. And I suppose, yeah, that gives you that buzz of, like, you know, you feel what you're doing is giving these players what they, you know, because at the end of the day, the players want to be successful. The players want to have fun. The players want to enjoy it. And they're going to have fun and enjoy it when they're being successful. So if you can help them be successful and they turn around to you and say, what you've done for me and the way you've set up the environment, the way you've conducted yourself, what you've been saying and what you've been doing with us, that's been helping towards our success, then, oh, that feeling's just, that's an amazing feeling. That's like, it's such a buzz, you know, and that's, you know, that's why I do it, you know, part of why I do it is because I, you know, we can all say, oh, you know, it's not about me, but, you know, we do it as a coach because we want to get a buzz out of it as well.
Of course we do.
You know, it's always nice when somebody says nice things about you and says what you're doing is great. And, you know, that's what the players, you know, as a coach, you know, the players, you know, like we're talking there about Revs and Belly and Klopp, for example, at Liverpool, is, well, why are the players enjoying it? Oh, because the manager, you know, the way he makes us feel. But then it's exactly the same way the other way. You know, the players make me feel amazing when they say, oh, what you did there, you changed the formation, or that little bit of information you give me, oh, it really, really changed my game and made a massive impact. You're like, oh, that is such a nice feeling. And you go away thinking, wow, I've had an impact there. And it kind of makes, it just motivates you to come back the next time and do it again.
Yeah, that's good. That, you know, I think that's just really nice to hear, you know, that you're feeling the same as you did as a player when you get that type of feedback from players as well. Yeah. And also seeing them like that as well. The feedback might just be visual, and actually you've seen them and you've seen it click, and the next thing they're starting to do the things that you've discussed, and then all of a sudden, wow, you know, and you get that same feeling. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, so. it's such a buzz. And I mean, it recently, you know, down here in Cardiff, I've been coaching Cardiff Uni for the last couple of years, and I've really, really enjoyed that. I mean, I took them on when I took the job on for Hockey Wales, and I moved into a new house and I had work on the house to do. So I didn't coach for a year on a weekend on a club domestic level. I was just doing the international stuff. And Cardiff Uni said to me, oh, will you come and, you know, maybe do some stuff with us? And I said, look, yeah, I'll come and do it on a casual basis. You know, I can't commit fully. You know, I'll be there when I can, but, you know, I can't be there all the time. They were like, yeah, fine. But once I got back into it, it was like I couldn't stay away. I just had to be there. And, you know, we've been pretty successful the last couple of years, and just got promoted into the new restructure with the conference and stuff with the guys. You know, the first time they'd been into that, you know, the England Hockey League and stuff like that. So they're buzzing about that. And, you know, we won the Bucks Trophy against Edinburgh back in March. So we've had a bit of success this season. And once again, it's kind of without coming across, I don't want to come across big-headed or arrogant or anything, but it was just when we won the Bucks gold, you know, we got on the bus back and we beat Edinburgh and we were 1-0 down at half-time and we were playing terribly. I mean, I've never seen a team play so bad. It was almost, I said to the boys, it was almost embarrassing that we'd made the final. It was like, people must have been thinking, how the hell have these boys made the final? We were terrible. And at half time, I just had a word with them. I just said, look, you know, this is what we need to do. Actually, what we need to do is just what we said we were going to do before the start of the game. We just haven't done it. You know, it's not like we actually need to do anything different. I remember coming back on the bus back with them, and they were just like, wow, what you said to us at half time. And we went on and won the game 3-1, and they were like, what you said at half time, we left half time going, we're going to win this, we're 1-0 down, we're going to win this, because what he's just said, we know if we trust what he's just said and go out and deliver it, we're going to win the game. And I was like, wow, that's like an amazing, amazing feeling for somebody to say they trust what you say as a coach that much. I mean, obviously there's that balance, and like I've said before, is we want the players to be making the decisions, and that's, you know, I am pushing for that. But there is a time and a place where the players are struggling for the answers and they just need you to tell them. You know, there's nothing wrong with that if it's the right thing to do at the right time. You know, if it's the right time to ask them a question, and there's been half-time team talks where I've literally just asked them three or four questions and they've come up with the answers. And I'm like, right, okay, well, go and do that. Go and do what you've just said. There's other times where literally, you know, they're flapping and they're panicking and they're kind of like, it's hang on a minute. If I ask them questions, I don't think we're going to get the impact. I think today at this point, I'm just going to tell them, do this, do this, do this, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just the skill of the coach, I think.
Yeah, to understand the learners in front of you and what they need at their time. So
yeah, knowing the situation and knowing like, well, at this time, these guys, they need me to tell them. At this point, they need direct, clear instruction with no questions, nothing about it. Just do this and do this. At other times, it's like, right, I need to ask them some questions. I need to draw the answers out of them. I need to get them to contribute to what we're going to do and ask them what they're seeing and get their opinions. And that's the skill of the coach. So, you know, with all this kind of, you know, a question approach, absolutely, we want to ask more questions than not. And we want to get the players making the decisions and we want to get the players input in and the coach facilitating that. But like I say, the coach is still there for a reason. And if there's a time and a place where the players need to be told something or shown something and it's quite direct instruction, then there's no issue with that. It's just the skill of the coach is to be able to know when is the right time to do that and what is the right thing to do in that moment.
And at the end of that game, it'd probably be different because it was the final and it's all finished. But at the end of that game there, for me, would have been a good time to... You've said it's a final, it's a cup final, you won a track, you probably didn't do this. But for me, it would be a really good time to sit down, question, what was the difference between first half, second half? Why has that happened and what would you do in the future? That would be really good. But I appreciate it. In a Bucks Cup final, the last thing on your mind would be about that. It would be about celebrating and getting a beer, probably.
It was. You know, as soon as we won the game, it was like, yeah, they were on the beers literally before we were off the pitch, you know. Yeah. So there wasn't, you know, but... I look at it and for me, I suppose I love doing training sessions. I love putting, you know, training sessions where, right, what have we done at the weekend or what do we need to work on? And I love putting training sessions together. Then you see in the impact and you're going, well, look, what I can see what we've worked on in the week or we've been working on for the last few sessions. And you can see it starting to develop within the team play on a weekend. You know, I really love that. But I really love the match day coaching. That for me is like, because I suppose I love the practice design, but also what I love is I love the tactical side of the game. I absolutely love the tactical side of coaching. Looking at opposition, seeing what they're doing, what's their formation, what are they trying to do with the ball, what are they trying to do without the ball, what are their strengths, what are their weaknesses, what do we have to be mindful of, what can we exploit? And that I love that side of the game. I love doing stuff at training that's like, right, I've watched them at the weekend, or, you know, I've watched us at the weekend, we're going to do a training that's related to the game. You know, it's like this is tactical training that's going to impact into the game at the weekend. And I really enjoy, you know, a Saturday game. I love it, you know, and I suppose I've said to a few people, my kind of, as a coach, and it's something, reading some stuff from Jose Mourinho many years ago, probably when he was the golden boy rather than the much maligned person he is nowadays. But he said that during the first half of the game, he never used to shout too much onto the pitch. And if you watch him in the first half, he's a lot more reserved, sitting down a lot more because he's trying to absorb what's going on and take in the information because he needs to relay that to the players at half time. He needs to give them some tactical information, some technical information based on what he's seeing. So he's being more analytical in the first half. And then in the second half, he says he's less analytical and he's more emotional and more motivational because he's trying to be like the 12th man to the players on the pitch in terms of give them encouragement. You know, it's more shouting and encouragement and motivation in that way, because he said he can go away and he's got time to reflect on the game afterwards, the second half. He's got time to go away and reflect because he doesn't have to do another team talk straight after the game. So I try to take that into my coaching in terms of I'm probably more reserved. And this is when I first started coaching,
I was coaching crew and North Staffs and Chester. I was a remote control coach. You know, I was like, you know, I was screaming at them, pass now, run now, you move here, you move there. And I basically played the game for them. It did work to a certain extent. I think, you know, it did work at times, but it was nowhere near as effective as kind of giving the players empowerment and stuff like that. And, you know, that's what I've kind of learned in the last few years in terms of I'm less shouty on the sideline. I don't really shout on as much. There's one or two bits where I shout on, but it's not a direct instruction often. It's just a reminder to get those players thinking. So rather than go here, I'll shout on, where do you think you can be at this moment? So they obviously know they're probably not in the right position, but I haven't told them where to be.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of direct instruction, as in, if I'm shouting at you, where should you be at this moment? You're probably in the wrong position, in my opinion, but it's up to you to find the right position where, you know, we think you should be. But yeah, that's where I've changed massively as a coach. I probably, you know, years ago was like, yeah, you go here, move here, step now, pass now, run here, you move here. And literally I called every single play.
Tiring, isn't it, as well, that bit?
Oh, it's tiring. And I look at people now when I'm watching games or I'm coaching against people and they're doing it, I'm thinking, oh God, will you just shut up?
Yeah.
You know, and I said to one or two people, like, are you going to talk the whole game?
Yeah.
Because it's really getting on my nerves. Now they can do it if they want. They've got I've got no right to stop them. But I'm literally like, you know, but I think back, yeah, once again, that's how I was. And I look back now and go, well, I didn't know any better. Am I embarrassed about it? Well, not really, because that's what I knew at the time. And I probably had to go through that to become the coach that I think I am now, you know.
It takes a lot of learning, especially if it was how you were coached as well. So if you saw that in a coach, then, you know, we are sporty people, a lot of sporty people, visual learners. So visual being, we've seen that person do that. So is that not how we coach? Also, a lot of parents perceive that that's what good coaching is because you are constantly giving instruction. So actually this change in philosophy in moving forward in line with GB, actually some of the stuff you've got to educate are the parents around what good coaching looks like and what we're trying to achieve with it. But B, the difference and the long-term athlete development or long-term player development or long-term person development, depends how we want to look at it. It's key for that model. Yeah. So
100%. And I've, you know, being the Wales under 18 head coach for the last 6 years, I remember the early years and the first 2 or 3 years. And I was really thinking hard about my coaching, and Dan Clements, who appointed me from Hockey Wales at the time, and was head of performance then, you know, we clicked because we just had this kind of this love for coaching and sharing knowledge. And, you know, I just, every bit of CPD I could get my hands on, I was just doing it. You know, I was reading everything, I was going to anything, I was just soaking it all up. And I remember the first couple of years at NAGS, we'd do feedback sessions and the players would be like, we want to do more drills, you need to shout more at us and stuff like this, because the players didn't know any better. And I kind of had to look at this feedback and go, oh, that's what the players want. And kind of act it almost, you know, I know we listen to what the players want, but actually go, well, you know what, I'm going to stick to my principles here, and we're not going to pander to the players' needs, because once again, they only know what they know, and they're used to this from their other environment.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I remember standing on the side of a few pitches, you know, in training sessions and games with Wales, and maybe things weren't going well or whatever, and I'm sitting there calmly, or I'm talking to people on the bench as they come off and giving them information, you know, quiet ones, or I'm asking them questions rather than shouting onto the pitch. I'm giving them the information and asking them when they come off and go back on. And I can feel it, that some parents have looked at me going, what's this guy doing? We're losing here and he's just sat there doing nothing. You know, it's like, well, I'm not doing nothing. I am actually speaking to people, but also what I'm doing is, yeah, we might lose this game as an under 16 or under 18 Wales team, but actually the losing might not be the worst thing, because the players will go through a few things. And it's not about them. Yeah, we want to win games at under 18 level for Wales, but if we don't, as long as we've learned something and it's going to help them become a better player in the future and help them potentially become a senior international, then I can live with that, you know? So that it is a re-education bit, and very similar. Just like one little story, when I first moved down this neck of the woods down to South Wales, I took a job over in Bristol, at Bristol University, and had a great couple of years there heading up the programme. And
I remember I took the boys over the first year, and at the first half of the season, we changed things. We changed the philosophy. We changed the playing style. We changed the way training was. They were like, it was totally different the way we're trying to play. You know, I was very much asking them more questions. I was less telly. I was giving them more empowerment. And training wasn't too prescriptive in terms of we weren't doing loads of repetition of drills and techniques. It was, we were playing lots of little games and that kind of, and lots of small unit play. And we were second bottom at Christmas. And we were like, we were second bottom at Christmas. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my God. And then all of a sudden, after Christmas, we came back. And if you'd have gone points tally for the second half of the season, we were the best team in the league. And we ended up fourth. And I remember the last game of the season, we won it. And we ended up finishing fourth. And having been second bottom at Christmas and like almost like we're going to get relegated here if we're not careful.
Yeah.
But I changed nothing. And I remember at the end of the last game of the season, we had a huddle. And one of the lads went, we're going to win the league next year. I didn't say anything. He said, we're going to win the league next year. Get back for pre-season early, boys. We will win the league next year. And that was it. That was the end of the huddle, and we went away. And I remember then reading something about Brendan Rodgers, who's probably much maligned as well, because he's an absolutely fantastic coach. Just maybe made a couple of poor decisions in transfers and stuff at Liverpool without going into too much depth about that. In terms of, you know, as a person and what he, you know, the way he coaches, he's an amazing guy. I remember reading something about the reason his teams get better in the second half of the season is because of the empowerment approach he uses. So it might take a few months, you know, you'll get immediate results. If you tell somebody where to stand and you do lots of drilling of repetition and you tell them we're doing this and you play in a very, very prescriptive way, you'll get immediate results, but it's not going to be for the long term. Whereas if you switch it the other way and you kind of ask more questions and you get the players to make more decisions and your training is more game based, it might take a little bit more time to kind of for the players to grasp those ideas and for them to come, you know, to come out and be, you know, be effective in a game. But when it starts to happen, it really, you know, it really takes hold. And, you know, and I remember thinking, yeah, that's exactly it. We've had a tough start at Bristol. Because I've had to change things, I've put my structure in, and it was tough to begin with. But then look, all of a sudden after Christmas, we just clicked into another gear. Because it just takes time and takes patience. And I think that's what I'd say to coaches is they'll change their approach to this more game-based questioning style approach where there's more empowerment and decision making given to the players. And like I said before, still the coach has to give some input at times and be direct. There's no issue with that, but I think a lot of coaches kind of go, oh, I'm handing this responsibility to the players and we've changed it around. I'm asking more questions and we're struggling. But that isn't a bad thing. That struggle is part of the learning. And when the learning happens, then the results you get and the difference you get is amazing. But you've got to go through that and have that trust and patience in it. And I suppose I'm lucky that, you know, it went the right way at Bristol. And therefore, we then the next season, we went top first game of the season and won the league. So it was like, well, I feel justified in the methods I used, which now that gives me confidence going to Cardiff, going to doing the stuff with Wales is, well, I know this stuff works. I've done it before.
It's tough when you get in a rut. So when you get in a rut and people start to not believe and you and stuff like that, then that's a really tricky situation. But I would be with you on that in the fact of, as long as the players and yourselves have set out what you would like to achieve and we've done it and we're going through it and we all trust each other that this will eventually turn ourselves around, as long as everyone's still buying into it, it genuinely does happen. It genuinely does happen.
Yeah. So. And that's where I am now in terms of that's, you know, I think come full circle there with the coaching like we discussed in terms of, you know, those early years. I literally just turned up when I was coaching North Staffs and regurgitated what we did at Brooklands without any thought. And then as I started getting into my coaching, I give a bit more thought to, well, why are we doing this on a Wednesday night at training? Why are we doing this? I was still remote control coaching on a weekend, but I was thinking more. And then as I've progressed and, you know, and gone and coached down in Cape Town and taken on the Wales NAG boys, I've become more in terms of, well, how do people learn? How does my behavior on the sideline, how does the way I talk to players? When do I ask questions? When am I direct? Those softer skills of coaching, that's what's developed in the last few years. So it's kind of that evolution of my coaching, I would say, is I went from a coach who was very remote controlled and didn't think about what they were doing at training on a weeknight because he just repeated what he'd done at club sessions, to thinking about what we were doing, but still a remote control coach. And now I'm probably at a stage where I'm not a remote control coach, but I've got that understanding of when players need, they need me to just hold their hand and show and tell them where to go and what to do. And when it's time to just say, you're on your own here, I'm going to be supportive of you, but it's up to you to make the right decision at the right time. You know, I'm just giving you the support and the structure to do that. So yeah, I would think I've gone full circle, or, you know, I'm at a total different end of the scale to where I was 10 years ago. And hopefully I'm not anywhere near done. You know, I've got plenty more learning to do. So
absolutely. I would say, having experienced your coaching on the ACP when you did my goalkeeper workshop, I bloody loved this. I made more notes in that one than in a lot of others, mainly because it is an area where, you know, I just felt I still needed that support. And I just thought you were great at the small bits of drip feeding information, even the way that you questioned us as participants and in as a coach, you questioned the kids that were there as well, and some of the activities that you did, just made me really think more around a few of the things I was doing. So I would certainly support that.
Thanks. That's nice to hear. And yeah, like, go back to the point before, is, you know, it's always nice to get praise. You know, whether you're a player, whether you're a coach, whatever walk of life you're in, you know, it's always nice to get that feedback, and it just makes you. You know, that feedback you've just given me there, and likewise with the players, it just fuels me and fires me up to just be even better.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, if they think I'm this good now, how good can I be?
Yeah. And I would say those goalkeepers that left, I mean, some of them have traveled miles to get there, which is the most bizarre thing I'd ever heard of how far they were traveling to get there just to do that sort of workshop. But, they definitely would have left.
And that was it. I remember that night, you know, my plan was, with the workshop, we'd just do an hour on the pitch with the players.
Yeah.
And then when I asked a couple of them, oh, you know, where have you come from tonight? And he was like, I've driven from Derby. And I'm like, wow. You know what I mean? And one was like, I was like, my, they've, and I remember talking to you and the other guys, the other coaches on the workshop, and saying, look, can we stay out here for a bit longer and just do another half an hour with these guys? Because I feel really bad if we just go in after an hour.
Yeah, I've no idea how they would have got the info around that workshop, to be honest with you, because it wasn't really around the play. It should have just been like the local club just providing some goal. It was all a touch with, but it was great. And it was, I think that I would say that was just good. You adapted, we adapted, players adapted. It was great, and I just think that just shows the sort of environments that these people were in, is that none of them were dissatisfied with anything, in the fact of, yeah, no, that's cool, and we just kind of did it, didn't we? And it was good.
And that's that, although that, you know, that's a workshop I delivered as a tutor for GB hockey, and, you know, it was tutoring, you know, and supporting you guys as coaches, but at the end of the day, that it was another coaching session. And like you just said there, it's, you've just got to be adaptable. I turned up with a plan of what we were going to do over the 3 hours. And it was like, well, you know, okay, we'll do this inside first, and we'll go out on the pitch and we'll do this, and then we'll come back inside. And we turn up and there's no meeting room, there's no projector book. You know, we ended up doing it around a table in the bar, you know, the chat beforehand. And then we go out on the pitch and we find out these kids have traveled for hours and hours and hours. So we stay out there a bit longer, and then we go back in the bar for a chat. That was totally different to any workshop that I've done before. But did you guys and the players go away having learned something and feeling like that was worthwhile? Then I think you did. And I went away going, do you know what? That was, I really enjoyed that. It wasn't like any of the other workshops I've done. But you know what? It doesn't matter. Have we achieved what we wanted to achieve? Have they gone away learning something? And that's exactly like a training session. Yes, turn up with a plan and an idea in your head of, we're going to work on this and we're going to work on that. But if you suddenly start doing the training session and it kind of veers off in another direction, as long as that's the direction that's the right thing at that time and the players want to go in that direction, then just go with it. Mm-hmm. You know, don't be afraid and that, you know, just adapt. Whereas that's probably where I was years ago, is if we had have veered off in another direction, I'd have been like, oh God, this is not what I planned. Yeah. You know, this isn't following my diagrams on my sheet. You know, I had at 7:15, we were going to move on to this.
Yeah.
It's now 7:25, and oh, it's completely screwed up my plans for the night. Whereas now I'm like, I turn up, I've got a couple of ideas of what we want to do. This is the theme. These are the key points I want to get across. This is the exercise we're going to kick off with. This is what I think we might move it on to. But you know what? From here, it could go anywhere. And I think the best sessions I've had as a tutor on a coaching workshop or a coaching course, or as a coach delivering a session, is the sessions that went totally different to what you'd planned.
Mm.
And you just went with them. And you went, you know what? We're just going with the flow and the feel of the session.
Yeah.
And that's another thing for you know, for more new coaches to hockey or football, whatever sport, or inexperienced guys delivering sessions, is it's that takes bravery and experience to be able to do that.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of, you know, and that I wouldn't expect somebody who's just starting to be able to do that. That takes confidence, and that takes years of doing it, that you can go, you know what, I'm confident that I can screw up the bit of paper I had in my pocket, I can get rid of those ideas that I had in my head, and I can just almost make this up on the spot, because this is what we need to do at this moment. But I've got that in the locker, I've got that knowledge stored away, that I can change tact and go in a different direction. So yeah,
the starting point is often the critical thing with that, I think. In fact, that would be for me anyway, is that as long as we start in a good place and we all know what we're trying to achieve, whether that be a theme, whether that be, you know, something specific to the team or whatever it might be, and it's highlighted, generally, as you're getting through that, the next bits, it all depends on your culture and your environment, the next bits could go one way, could go another way, or it could go where you think it might go. But ultimately, the coach, is as long as they're good at managing situations, because sometimes if it goes off in completely opposite different direction, it might not be a bad thing. But also, you've got to think, are we still getting out of what we need to achieve?
Yeah.
A good coach, a good manager of that situation would just bring that back in the line a bit. And again, that might be a tell, or it might be a question. Is this really helping us achieve this?
Yeah.
You know, so where could we go next with that? And I think that's definitely what I've learned over a period of time, is that don't be afraid of it, but also still think about what we are trying to achieve and what we set out to do.
Yeah, and that's the job of the coach, isn't it? Like you just said, is that's the skill for me, is going, although we're not sticking to the plan and we've gone off in a different direction, are we still achieving what we want to achieve? Or even if we're not achieving what we want to achieve, are we achieving something that's relevant to us in another aspect of our play?
Yeah.
You know, and that's fine. If it goes off in a different direction where you're going, this is good, but it's not really relevant to us, and it's kind of, then that's when you got to bring it back on track. But that's the skill of coaching, and to be honest, that only comes from, like anything, doing lots of it over a long period of time, watching lots of other people coach, learning from them, learning from your mistakes. You know, there's so many sessions I've gone away from, and even now go away from, going, why didn't I do that?
Yeah.
I should have asked a question there. You know, you'll never deliver a perfect session. Even if you deliver a session where you're like, that's amazing, there's always one or two points that you're thinking, we could have done that, couldn't we? Or I could have done that a little bit better. And I think that's the thing that keeps me coming back, you know, along with the kind of the praise you get from the players, and that feeling of satisfaction when things come off and you see your work kind of as a coach being rewarded, and the players enjoying it, and the players getting reward and satisfaction from it. Also, never ending quest to deliver the perfect session, and that's what keeps you bringing you back, is you're never going to deliver the perfect session, but you keep coming back because you're chasing that perfect session.
Absolutely. I'd love to deliver somewhere near perfect. It'd be great.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying I'm delivering perfect in my eyes. It might not be in other people's eyes, but it's kind of like I say, I've never delivered the perfect session, and you always, even if you think it's great, you just the way I am nowadays, and I think I'm not saying I'm a great coach, but all the great coaches are, is to, in terms of, they always think what they do could be better. Yes, it's good, but could it be better? And that's the same for the great players, isn't it, in any sport?
Mm.
Yeah, I was good today, I was great, but can I be even greater? Can I
reflection
be better?
So the way that we reflect, and the way as a player you reflect, the way as a coach you reflect, massively important. I definitely didn't used to reflect at all. probably my first parts of reflection was when I worked with Brett Holland and James Bateman and Danny Crowther at Performance Centre, what, 4 years ago now? And we were at the end of a session, it'd be 9 o'clock at night, and at 10 past 10, I still stood in the car park reflecting. Yeah. And I was thinking, I've never done this before. So then on my way home, I'd still be rethinking about what they thought around. And then from there, Kevin was sort of probing a little bit. And then gradually over time, I've just reflected so much. Whereas now, actually, it's just natural in my own head, or might talk to myself in the car when I'm driving back, even if it's just into my phone, maybe make some notes. I think reflecting is huge. And
it's huge, yeah. And I'm not, I've never really been one to write down notes and reflections, but I'm always, I literally, as soon as I get in the car after a session, the whole journey home is literally thinking about the session.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's so many other times during the week, you know, when I'm not working and not on the day job and other and doing other things, it's like just sitting around the house thinking, right, I've got, what that session, it's just thinking about coaching more, you know, and thinking about what you're doing rather than just, like I said, when I first started, I wouldn't think about it. I'd turn up, I'd deliver, I'd go home. Whereas now, whenever I get chance, I'm always thinking, I'm always looking stuff up. I'm always, you know, you know, with everything that's out there today, YouTube, Twitter, you know, all the stuff that's out there, you know, the amount of sharing that's going on in hockey, you can't get away from kind of reflecting and learning, really. You know, it's if you're not doing it, then you know, you're missing out massively, and you can't, there's no excuses, because there's just so much out there these days. Whereas maybe when I started 10, 12 years ago now, 13 years ago, there wasn't as much, you know, and you had to really dig hard to find stuff and get information on hockey and coaching. Whereas now, you know, it's at your fingertips. You can get it. And everybody, I think most people are so open, you know, you could drop anyone a message on Twitter or whatever, or get their email address. And, you know, I think the hockey world's so open to sharing and discussing, you know, that's the world we're in. And you've just, as a coach, you've just got to make the most of that and absolutely lap it up, because if you do that, you'll notice your coaching just goes up another notch, and you'll see the rewards from it. So
completely agree. Well, we've shattered through that bit of information there. We've gassed away. No doubt people will have some chats around it. People will probably want to know more information, and if so, then I will add you into the usual tweet so they can get back to you. But Lee, look, thank you for your time. Thanks for chatting me before we came on as well. We've now been on the just over an hour and a half between the two of us. So, you know, wish you all your best carrying on, and I'm sure we'll stay in touch.
Yeah, definitely. And all the best to you. I think you're doing some great work, you know, with this podcast and getting the messages out there across hockey. It's you know, like I say, this is the kind of stuff that is great for coaches and wasn't there for me 10, 12 years ago. So, you know,
it wasn't there for me either. So,
yeah, so it's brilliant you're doing it, and I've enjoyed chatting. You know, I always love chatting about coaching, and I'm always up for a chat, and an hour and a half chatting to you is always good fun. And you know, if you like to say, if anyone wants to get in touch, drop me a tweet or you know, send me an email, then do so, and I'm more than happy when it comes to hockey just to chew the fat and shoot the breeze about hockey, you know. So
indeed, much appreciated. As my daughter told me the other day when she came home from school, that she's 4 year old, she turned around and she goes, "Daddy, sharing is caring." So that's what this podcast is pretty much all around. It's just sharing some ideas because we all care about the sport. That's pretty much
100%.
It.
So. All right. Thanks for that. Cheers now.
No worries, mate.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.